This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, live from the Museum of Natural Sciences in downtown Raleigh, and this is radio you can watch live on the internet. Go to stateofthings.org. We are streaming this show. Well, you know, for most comedians, the dream goal is to perform before a packed club or go live on a late-night TV show. But for Brian Mallow, the dream is different. His holy grail is a room packed with science and engineering types roaring with laughter at jokes only the geekiest among us might understand. Brian also helps make science funny and understandable for the rest of us as curator of the Daily Planet here at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. And Brian Mallow joins us once again. Welcome back. Good to have you.
It's great to be here again, Frank. And don't get me wrong, I could have a room full of science and engineering types, and it could also be a television show. I'm not opposed to, like, taking it to the masses.
Well, we've got the hybrid going here, and I think it's going to. So we talked to you as you were coming in, and you were taking over this job. The museum was very interested in making sure that science was understandable, and people were brought in to understand what was going on. You've been here about 2 years. How's it going?
Yeah, it's been about 2 years since the Nature Research Center was opened and added to the museum, and it was really built. They brought on some new researchers. And they also had this other part of a mission of communication of science was a big part of it. And I knew some of the people that were putting this together, and they knew me. So it was a pretty natural fit, actually. It may not sound like it. What's a comedian doing here? But in addition to my couple decades on stage, I've made science videos for Time Magazine, and I've contributed audio pieces to Neil deGrasse Tyson's radio show, and I'd actually done a little training of scientists to help them be better public speakers, and all of those things are my job here.
Well, you were doing a lot of stand-up and all of those other things, and then you came here. How did things change for you, or did they? And are you still – I mean, are you still able to get out there and perform and do that sort of thing?
How did things change moving from San Francisco to North Carolina? Nothing really comes to mind.
Be careful, Brian. You need to be careful because you know I'm a zealot for this place. Keep going.
Oh, you know what? We absolutely love it here.
I will say San Francisco would be the one hard place for me to leave, even to come here. That's a toss-up.
Surprisingly, though, my wife and I came here. It was a big decision to go, wow, are we really going to do this? I went from being a freelancer to come work for this museum and work for the state of North Carolina and to move here. And I'd lived in San Francisco 17 years.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But turns out, I have to say that we don't miss it that much. Mm-hmm. We've really enjoyed the entire experience. We like our neighbors. We like our colleagues. We like the place. So how has it changed? You know, it's really – I did go from being a freelancer to coming here for this job. But this job consists of all the things I like doing. So on a daily basis, I'm in this beautiful place. I'm working with scientists. My job in the Daily Planet, our giant globe that everyone should be familiar with, is to host talks by scientists and sometimes interview a scientist on stage, where that's where I think – that's what my role is about. I'm not here to make everything funny. If I can make it funny, that's bonus. That's great. But I love science. And so if I can bring out the passion and what's interesting and bring it, make sure it's at the right level for a young audience or a general audience, an audience that may not think they like science, and I think that that's a thing I love to do. Let me show you. This is interesting. You wouldn't believe. Yeah. Look, you can take yeast from a wasp and make beer. Tell me that's not interesting.
Well, but you have to communicate it, because we had a scientist here who was great at telling us about it. But somehow we all had to put those pieces together. They figured out how to brew the beer. Now you've got to figure out how to bring that to public attention, and B, how to make it understandable, right? So what? And humor is a tool, but not the only tool that you use. So what is the art of communicating science?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that exactly. Except I think that the way I do it, I'm not a scientist. I love science. I have always loved science, so I'm passionate about it, and I'm pretty knowledgeable. So I love it, and there's something of the teacher in me. And the thing I think I'm good at is being a bridge between the scientists and the public, that our scientists, as with experts in anything, sometimes they might take for granted that something they're saying is understandable to everyone. And I'm there to notice that if I didn't understand it, I'll bet the rest of the audience didn't. And even if I did understand it, That's one of my jobs, is to realize, even if I did understand it, that it needed to be clarified a little. So I just help that communication process. When I hear something, I might ask a question to get them to elaborate a little. And I do that in the Daily Planet. We also, just to give another shout out to the food sciences people at NC State, we do a weekly science cafe in our cafe. And that we have three times featured food science people from over there to do the science of chocolate, the science of ice cream, and the science of bacon. And actually, we had Sean from Full Steam to do the science of beer. And so one of the great things about the Science Cafe is just that, is to recognize that there's science in everything. We're talking about chocolate, ice cream, beer, bacon, but we're going to show you that there's some science to it.
And the kind of work they're doing at NC State. I mean, how is it to work in a place like this where, you know, not far down the road, you have NC State and Rob Dunn, who was doing the research on wasp yeast to begin with, because he's big on backyard science, so promoting you going out in your backyard, then reporting to them, they'll keep the database. There's a real interest statewide in...
Oh. People should realize that of the many things that are wonderful about the Triangle and about North Carolina, there's excellent science going on here. There is cutting-edge, interesting science, and Rob Dunn's a great example. With the museum and his staff, we do a lot of stuff together, and it's stuff that no one else is doing. And a lot of citizen science projects that get people to come in and like, hey, let us check the microbes that are living in your armpit. Let us do a little scraping of your face to check out the face mites that are living on you and compare them to the face mites of people from other states or other countries. So these are things that no one else is doing. So
if my face mites ever bred with wild yeast spores, would that be the movie?
There you go. See, why don't you propose that research project to Rob, and then the movies would come.
And to that end, the North Carolina Sciences Festival, right?
Yes.
Tell us about that. That's coming up very
soon
this weekend.
I'm not sure how many years they've been doing it, but the NC Science Festival is a huge event. It's statewide. There are probably hundreds of events over the course of a few weeks. We have a couple here. So this Saturday is the Triangle SciTech Expo. And it's free, and it's all day Saturday, and there will be speakers from both industry and academics, from researchers, and there will be exhibits, all sorts of fun games. So it'll be stuff for people of all ages, the Triangle SciTech Expo this Saturday. And of course, since it is April Fool's Day, we're having another festival event tonight here at the museum in the WRIL Theater. It's an evening of science comedy with me, Brian Mallard.
Have you gotten to do much of that since you took this job?
Yeah, not as much, obviously. Yeah. But like I said, I still get to do a lot of the same stuff. I'm not touring around doing that much. I occasionally get to go speak somewhere or perform somewhere. But, you know, my focus is doing most of that here. And like I said, I learn something every day. We have astronomers and geologists and paleontologists and entomologists and mammalogists and geneticists. So there's so much science going on just in this museum that I can learn something new every day, and maybe it could be a source of a little humor if I'm lucky.
That would be great. But all of that, I think, speaks to the creativity in science, which had been perhaps not showcased in the March of Science as it developed over the past couple of centuries. And now we're coming back to that, to understanding that this really is a creative task, with the way we see design married to technology at NC State, and those two things go hand in hand, and talking about the art of making beer and the science of controlling yeast. All of those things then speak to each of us, right? I mean, very personally, it's a creative art, and we can all sort of participate in
this. I'm really glad you said that, because that is something that you don't think of is, if I was going to become a scientist, well, I'd rather do something more creative. Science is very creative. In fact, you might know there's a famous quotation from Albert Einstein that he said, imagination is more important than knowledge. And of course it's about imagination, because scientists have to make novel observations. They have to look at – in fact, I've actually felt – I didn't become a scientist, but I considered it. But what I do in some ways, don't laugh at me, but it's not good when a comedian says don't laugh at me. But when I say that it's not really that different what I do. Like very often what a joke starts with me making an observation. Like there's an interesting observation there, and maybe I can develop it into something. And it's only interesting if it's a novel observation. If it's already been done, I don't want to talk about it, really. And same with scientists. They have to look out, and it's great all the science that's already been done, but they want to make a novel observation and then pursue it and go, hey, why does that bug do that weird little thing? I don't know. Let's look into it. There's a lot of creativity in science.
Yeah, but that said, is there a difference when you were writing comedy for a living around science? Is there a difference when you're creating comedy for science or with that in that genre than other comedy?
Not really. I don't see it as that different. But from the beginning, because of my love of science, which preceded my interest in comedy, when I started doing comedy, my love of science was already there to inform my comedy. So from the beginning, it was a little science geeky. And I would make science references, and there might be a little nugget of science truth in something I'm saying on the way to a punchline. So already the sort of style of comedy that I was evolving wasn't that different. If I have a room full of scientists, physicists, I can play to their special knowledge. And I know they know this sort of stuff, and I can make references that they understand. If I play to a room of a general audience, then I might have to at least approach the delivery a little different and making sure they know the things I need them to know for the punchline to work.
And when you do the Schrodinger cat joke, then you can just shrug and say, well, I knew you were going to get that.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, some jokes are informative, and we don't have to actually retell this because we did it in our billboard. The two viruses walk into a bar,
yes.
And the bartender says, I don't serve viruses, and they say...
The virus replaces the bartender and says, now we do.
And this is illustrative. Now we know what viruses do, and I can explain this sort of occult process by which a virus hijacks my cellular material and becomes me.
Yeah, it's interesting you chose that one. I got contacted by a professor in England who uses that joke, and he even used a part of it, like a line, as a title of one of his lectures. And one of the things that's great for science communication is a tool that is also great for comedy or communication in general, which is the analogy. Analogies are powerful tools. They're great tools for comedy because sometimes you can make a really absurd analogy, but it ends up serving a purpose to point out and clarify like a relationship. Analogies are great for scientists to use to bring a complex situation down to our level.
And particularly, I would think a comic analogy, one that ends with a punchline, because the other thing that humor does is relax the tension. So when we're working and struggling to get it, that's when it's really hard. The minute we relax and let go and laugh, all of a sudden the gates open up and in comes the information,
yes.
Right?
It's yes.
A beautiful moment. I think it's analogous to political comedy in the sense that it also allows us to understand complex, sort of political issues or shed light on this process. The politician was trying to conceal all of this, and you just crack it wide open
yes.
when you know Jon Stewart does what he does, right?
Yes, absolutely. I don't know.
Political comedy and how
political
it's the same
comedy,
as – yeah.
I think that it's very analogous. And sometimes, you know, as a comedian, I don't really have an obligation to educate. I just have an obligation to entertain. But – as a science comedian, there is this expectation that I'm going to teach a little too. Some of my material definitely is informative and teaches a little bit, but some of it is just silly and playful with science. And I do feel like if I have an audience, if there's someone in the audience that thinks science is boring or hard or uninteresting and they don't think they like it or think they don't like it, if I can just make them laugh with some silly stuff that's all science flavored, I would like to hope that I've won them over a little bit, where they walk out of there and they can't say science is quite as boring as they thought because this was all science humor and yet you had a fun evening and maybe I've made you think a little bit, even if I didn't outright teach you anything.
The two things that must be frustrating for you, one is science is boring and the other is I don't understand science. And I say that because we all, whether or not we failed science in college or high school, we have a cosmology, right? We have a way of explaining the way things work, whether it's correct or not. That's our science, you know?
Yeah. You know what? Science is just about curiosity and satisfying our curiosity. So it is such a fundamentally human thing that when people it's odd for people that appreciate science, it's even hard to contemplate the person that doesn't, because it's like, wait a minute, how can you not? It's just, you're not curious about the planet we live on, the world that we're born into. Science encapsulates absolutely everything. Aren't you a little curious how this microphone works?
Well, here's our problem, and it gets to some. You know, for instance, there are climate change deniers, right? Mm-hmm. And there are people who we passed a law in the state that says you cannot measure the sea level rise if you're talking about development.
You can drown, but you can't measure it.
We don't want to know. This is through the looking glass in terms of our science of understanding. So you say, how could a human being be so deliberately blind to the science? Because we make up stories, Brian, and I think we stick to them, and that's our problem. It's that I was already curious about how this mic works. I have an explanation for how this mic works, and I don't need yours anymore. I believe for the longest time, my mother told me when I was like 3 years old, I said, why is a tea kettle whistle? She said, there's a little man in there. He gets very, very hot. He turns red, and he whistles.
So you're sticking with that.
So what happened was, I think I was 11 years old, and we were playing football, and somebody asked, why tea kettle whistle? And I began to tell that story and realized how foolish it was, but what it told me was that from the age of 3 to the age of 10, I had never asked myself again, and now at the age of 10, I'm asking myself, and of course it's a foolish story, but that was the that was how tea kettles worked
for
10 years.
Yeah, and you know what? There are many stereotypes about scientists, but one of them would maybe be that they're know-it-alls, and that it's about they know it all, and they just want to tell you. That's not what scientists are really about. Scientists are about the questions. It's not that they want to know everything. They love, it's really detective work. They really want to work on the questions. Once they solve something and know it, okay, I'm done with that. It's time to move on. What we want, we like these things that we don't know. It's like show me some ignorance out there and let me try to solve some of it. So scientists, they're really like detectives. They're just trying to solve little mysteries about the universe.
Brian, always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Nice to be here.
Brian Mallow, the science comedian and curator of the Daily Planet here at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, going to give a talk here at 7 o'clock called Rational Comedy for an Irrational Planet, part of the North Carolina Science Festival, and that is our program for today. You can find out more about us at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Nicole Campbell, Megan Mataferi, and Anita Rao. Robin Copley, the technical director, Brett Wolf, the news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio.